Hello and welcome to the audio ministry of Pure Heart Christian Center. We are located at 12236 Southwest 128th Street near the Tamiami Airport in the Kendall area. I want to invite you now to join our lead pastor, Dennis Penton, as he dynamically shares another life-transforming message from God's Word.
Sometimes the unintentional results of a foolish act can be far greater than what we expect or anticipate. We've all heard stories of things that started out unintentionally, but that ended disastrously. A young kid is in the house alone with one of his friends, and he discovers a gun that his father was hiding. And in playing with the gun, he accidentally shoots and kills his best friend. Or we've heard stories of a teen that got a brand new car, and it's one of those speedy models, and he shows off, wants to show off the speed of his car and how fast it goes, but he loses control, and it strikes and kills two people. How many times in history has something like this happened? I would say that things like that happen over and over again, things that perhaps we haven't even heard of. A foolish act oftentimes can end in unintentional and irreparable damage and harm. Did you know that World War I started by mistake? Remember that? Some of you history buffs, the driver of the Austrian Archduke would make him the son of the emperor. Okay, the driver of the son of the emperor was supposed to drive the Archduke, his name was Franz Ferdinand, was supposed to drive him to the hospital, him and his wife, so they could see some patients that were there visiting, just to make a hospital call. And instead of turning towards the hospital, the driver took a wrong turn accidentally. And instead of going to the hospital, they run into a mob of people that were haters of the Ferdinand family, and they assassinated both of them, the husband, the wife. And that started World War I, a wrong turn. And we have these examples, often, and that's exactly what happened when Solomon's reign ended. And we've been following, some of the highlights and the different, more well-known stories in the Bible. And we've come to the end of Solomon's story, and we're taking off, or we're passing on the baton. We're not going to cover all the kings, but we're passing the baton on to his son. And today we're going to talk about how the kingdom got divided. And it wasn't just his son that was there. There was a couple players that brought about this decline. But something unexpected happened with his son. His son's name was Rehoboam, by the way. And what happened was, on the day that Rehoboam was about to be inaugurated as the new king, the people made a request of him. They made a simple request. And what happened is that after consulting with several people, the would-be king denied their request. And as a result, what happened? The nation rejected him as their king. And shortly after that, the nation became two nations. And kind of a civil war. It wasn't really a civil war, but it was the results of the civil war in where the nation wound up being divided. That was an unintended consequence that shaped the history to this nation. In other words, when you and I refer and you read your Bible, you read parts where it refers to Israel, you read parts where it refers to Judah, and you're kind of wondering, who is it talking about? Well, the difference is, later on in history, from this point, from today's story forward, Israel is going to be two nations. The nation to the north is going to be known as Israel or the northern kingdom, and the nation to the south is going to be known as Judah or the southern kingdom. Now, that's important to know. Why is that important? Because when you read through the Bible, you're going to realize that God raised up some prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and some of the minor prophets, Zephaniah, Zechariah, Malachi, and all those prophets are speaking to a particular group. They're not speaking to Israel as a whole. Some of them were sent to the northern kingdom, and some of them are speaking and prophesying to the southern kingdom of Judah. But it all began right here in today's story, right? And the northern kingdom, a couple of things that you need to know about them is that the northern kingdom is going to consistently have evil kings, right? And those are the people that rejected Rehoboam. Rehoboam was not a good guy. We're going to talk about him, but he was not a good guy, but he was still part of the lineage of David, and God was going to honor the lineage of David. And so Rehoboam stayed in the south in the region that's now known as Judah, and Judah, or the southern region, was going to have bad kings, but also good kings. But the fact that the northern kingdom had bad kings, that made them be the first ones that were invaded, okay, by a superpower known back then as Assyria. And Assyria took them captive, and they were never heard of again. That's why you hear the term the lost tribes of Israel. Where does that come from? It comes from the fact that Assyria took them captive, made them slaves, and nobody heard from them ever again. And then, of course, because Judah had mixed kings, some good and some bad, the judgment, okay, that was due them was prolonged because a good king would step in and he'd bring in reform and he would bring in revival and people would get right with God. And all of a sudden, God says, okay, so I'm still protecting you, right? And so that's kind of what happens. But all of it began right here in today's lesson. There's a lot of things that we're going to learn from today's lesson. And primarily, we're going to look at how the country became divided. How does that apply to us? Well, every day we see division. We are divided. Okay, as a nation, we're divided. We're divided politically. We're divided racially. We're divided culturally. We're divided economically. We're divided, in classes. And so we're continually facing division. Sometimes we're divided in our own homes. So what we're going to talk about at the end hopefully becomes something that's very important steps for you to try to keep the peace when possible. Not all division is bad. Right? Not all division is bad. Isn't that what we talked about last week? About Solomon all of a sudden joined to what? To 1,000 women. 700 wives, 300 concubines, and it says, and they turned his heart away from God. And so why was it that the kingdom became divided? It became divided because of Solomon's sin. But the point here at this, what I'm trying to say here at this point is that Solomon's heart was turned away because of bad associations. There are some people in your life that bring you down. It's good to divide from them. It's good to divide from them. Why? Because nothing's more important than your soul and your well-being and your spiritual growth. And if there's some people that are not good for your soul and your well-being and your spiritual growth, better you get to heaven with two friends than you split hell wide open with 1,000. Which, by the way, they won't be your friends in hell. So look at the presentation and say, truth. Yeah. So Solomon would have been the last of the kings of the United Kingdom. Don't confuse the United Kingdom with the UK, like, Britain. The United Kingdom we're referring to back here in this history. Solomon reigned 40 years. Before him, David reigned 40 years. And before him, Saul reigned 40 years. All of them reigned in the United Kingdom. So the kingdom of Israel was united under a monarchy for 120 years, right? But then, because of Solomon's sin, okay, because of Solomon's sin, a division was going to come about. And God told him that, right? Now, divisions never occur overnight, right? There's always, a lingering hostility that's gone, under the surface, right? There's always attitudes that form. There's always something brewing. And, it's a bitterness. It's an angst. It's an anger, okay? It's something. It's an attitude that's inside. And some of that was still brewing within the nation of Israel. And so there was a rift that was forming from early on. You could trace it all the way back from the time of Absalom, when Absalom tried to topple his father, right? And so there was a group that Absalom won over, and that group, they just kind of went their own ways, but it doesn't mean that they were content. And so within the nation of Israel, there were a group of people that, you know, they were discontent. And so what happened now with Solomon coming off the scene and his son coming in the scene, all of a sudden, everything that was brewing came to a boiling point. Right. So now there's three people that you need to remember. Three people that were major players in the events that we're going to talk about today, which is a division of Israel. It was Solomon. It was Rehoboam, Solomon's son. And there was also a guy named Jeroboam. Right. Now, in Solomon, going to Solomon, God granted him great wisdom. You already know all the highlights and the things that he did. His downfall, of course, came because he loved the ladies. And the ladies, it says, they brought in their pagan and foreign religions, and Solomon gave himself to those religions, okay? And God was not well pleased with that because it turned his heart towards those pagan gods. And listen to what God tells him. We're in the book of 1 Kings. We're going to look at chapter 11 and just kind of, you know, go back and forth between 11, 12, 13, and 14, and 15, too. And we're not going to read a lot of verses. Well, we'll read a few, but not. I'm going to purposely cut some of these short and just bypass them. But in verse 11... of 1 Kings 11, the Lord said to Solomon, because you insist on doing these things and have not kept the covenantal rules I gave you, I will surely tear the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant. Mark that in your Bible. Servant. I'm going to give it to your servant. But look at, jump over to verse 13. It says, but I will not tear away the entire kingdom. I will leave your son one tribe for my servant David's sake and for the sake of my chosen city, Jerusalem. God says, Solomon, because of what you did and because your heart was led astray to worship pagan gods, okay, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you. I'm not going to take it completely away from you, but I'm going to take a good portion away from you, okay, 10 kingdoms, and I'm going to give it to who? To a servant. Well, who is Jeroboam? That's the guy who's going to come on the scene later on. Jeroboam was a servant of Solomon, right? So let's talk about Jeroboam for a moment, right? Because Jeroboam was a man, as the Bible knows him, as a son of a man named Nebat. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. And Jeroboam at one time was one of Solomon's workers, and he worked so well that Solomon kind of promoted him and gave him charge over the work crew of one of his tribes. But now, check what happens. Jeroboam is on the scene. He's a servant. And all of a sudden, you have a new prophet that shows up. This new prophet, his name is Ahijah. And Ahijah, one day, takes Jeroboam to the side, and he takes off his robe, right? And he tears his robe into 12 pieces. He tears his robe into 12 pieces, and he gives 10 pieces to Jeroboam, right? And he prophesies to him. He says, God is going to give you 10 tribes. And look at what he says, in fact. He says, he promised him, you know, he gave him a word from the Lord. He promised Jeroboam, you're going to be real successful as the first king of Israel if on the condition, what? On the condition that you walk in the steps of David. So Jeroboam had everything laid out for him. He could be blessed or not. He could be prosperous or not. He could have his family dynasty and lineage established forever and ever or not. And look at what he says in verse 36. I'm in 1 Kings 11. And this is the prophet, you know, giving him a word from the Lord. It says, I will take the kingdom from the hand of his son, referring to Rehoboam, Solomon's son, and I will give 10 tribes to you. Verse 37. I will select you. You will rule over all you have a desire, and you will be king over Israel. Verse 38, he tells him, but you must obey all I command you to do. Follow my instructions, do what I approve, and keep my rules and my commandments like my servant David did. Then I will be with you, and I will establish you a lasting dynasty as I did for David. I will give you Israel. Amazing promise. Now, did Jeroboam listen to that word? No, not at all. Right. So, but I get ahead of myself, because what happens is that Ahijah gives Jeroboam this prophecy, and all of a sudden, Solomon finds out about it. So what does Solomon do when he finds out that Jeroboam is in line to take over the kingdom? Okay, Solomon, okay, puts a price on his head and seeks to kill him, verse 40. Right. So what does Jeroboam do? He manages to escape, and he takes refuge in Egypt. Right. And so now the scene is set. The scene is set for the division of the kingdom. So now let's talk about the second person. Okay. Actually, the third person, because we already talked about Solomon. Okay. And so now we talk about, actually, you know why I say number two? Because I have it here, number two. Excuse me while I change my notes. Thank you very much. Okay. So now we talk about the third person, which is Rehoboam. Rehoboam, is, as I mentioned, is Solomon's only son, which I find kind of strange. Because the Bible only talks about three children that Solomon had. Okay, so he had a son, and he had two daughters, and yet he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. So, whatever. The point here is that no one would dispute that Rehoboam was the next in line, right? And so the problem occurred when he's about to be inaugurated as king, right? And look at 1 Kings chapter 12. That's where you find that. Okay, the problem is that when he's about to be inaugurated, the people make a request of him, right? And what do they ask him? They're saying, Rehoboam, would you lighten up on the taxes and the forced labor? Look at verse 4, 1 Kings 12. He says, your father was a hard master, right? They said, lighten the harsh labor demands and the heavy taxes that your father imposed on us, then we will be your loyal subjects. So the people are coming to him and they're saying, man, we're drowning, okay? We're drowning in the taxation, and we're drowning in the labor, because Solomon implemented a law of forced labor. He caused the Israelites to be involved in all his very ambitious building programs. And you know, Israel went through a renaissance. Jerusalem particularly went through a renaissance of sorts under Solomon's reign. But all that was at a cost. How am I going to have all the gold for the temple? How am I going to build this beautiful temple? How am I going to build my palace? How am I going to, pave the streets? How am I going to have all these structures? I need you to give. And so he's going to exact taxes, and not only taxes, not only do I need your money, I need your manpower, and we're going to force you to work, and so it was a bit much, right? And this is another one of Solomon's downfalls, right? That he heavily taxed people, and today we see that in our political world, in our political realm as well, don't we? We see that, politicians see oftentimes, taxation as a means to fund all their essential programs. And, you could overtax people. In fact, remember when Sherman Moore was retired with a tax on tea, so they had the Boston Tea Party. But in order for Solomon to do what he wanted to do, he had to tax people. He had to force labor. Listen, understand. I don't know if you know this, but maybe I say this for the sake of our young people that are here that we're so glad to have. Understand that no politician can promise you anything. Okay? Because the government does not have money. The only money the government has, it's what it's able to take from us through the taxation process. Right? And so when somebody comes and says, I'm going to give you this, and I'm going to give you that, and I'm going to give you, and I'm going to fix the transportation system, and I'm going to give you health care, and I'm going to give you, free lunches, and I'm going to give you all this, and they give you a whole list of things, I wish for once somebody would stand up to them and say, that is awesome, we need all of that, but how are you going to pay for it? Because that's a dirty little secret, right? Dirty little secret. The only way they're going to pay for it is either raise your taxes or take away from another program. And, once you incite a program in our government, it's nearly impossible to get rid of it, right? So why do I say that? I say that only because no government benefit is free. Somebody has to pay for it. What's true today was true back then, right? So what does Rehoboam do when they ask him, please lighten up? Look at what he does, verse 5. He says to the people, which is good, he says, give me a few days to think about it. Okay, and so what does he do? He goes first to a group of advisors, another good thing. So who does he go to? He goes to the advisors of his father, right? Solomon's advisors. So these would be the OGs, the original guard. Okay, these are older people, and Bible says that when you're older, you're wiser. I hope. So he goes to the older people, and look at what they tell him. Verse 7, it says, if you're willing to be a servant, they understood what a king should do. A king should be a servant. It says, if you really want to be a servant to these people today, and it says, give them a favorable answer. And they're always going to be your loyal subjects. So you want them to be loyal servants. The way you get them to be loyal servants is that you have to serve them. You have to give them a favorable answer. In other words, do what they're saying. They're being oppressed by the taxation and by the forced labor. Give them a little bit, and they're going to be with you forever, right? But you know what? Rehoboam didn't like that counsel. Right. He was probably young. He was probably inexperienced. He probably had a chip on his shoulder. He was probably thinking, they're out to get me, and I got to establish myself with a rod of iron, And so what does he do? He goes this time. He didn't like the advice. Look at verse 8 and 9. And so he asked the opinion of some of the people he grew up with, his buddies. His chums. Chums, they were chumps. Chummy chumps. Okay, and so look at verse 10. It says, and the young men replied, this is what you should tell those complainers who want a lighter burden. It says, my little finger is thicker than my father's waist. Yes, my father laid heavy burdens on you, but I'm going to make them even heavier. My father beat you with whips, but I'm going to beat you with scorpions. Say what? And that's what they tell him. And that's exactly what he tells the people. A couple days later, verse 12, he returns, verse 12 to 15, he returns and he gives them the exact answer, and it says, and he spoke harshly to them and he paid no attention to them. Right? So now watch what happens. Jump over to verse 16. It says, when the people realized that the king had refused to listen to them, they responded, down with the dynasty of David. Boo! Down with David. Back to your homes, O Israel. Look out for your own house. Oh, David, take care of yourself. We're going to take care of ourselves. And so the people of Israel returned home. And look at verse 19. It says, and to this day, the northern tribes of Israel have refused to be ruled by a descendant of David. Rehoboam was a foolish man. Right? He turned a deaf ear to the needs of his people. Okay, and as a result, he lost more than half of the nation. Right? That nation did not gather that day intending to split. That nation did not gather that day intending to divide it. But Rehoboam's arrogance, right? His pride and his harshness was too much for the people to bear, where they finally said, away with you. We don't need this. We'll start our own country. And that's exactly what they did. Because if you look at verse 20, it says, when the people of Israel, the northern kingdom, okay, this time it's referring to the northern kingdom already, they learned that Jeroboam returned from Egypt. They called an assembly and they made him king over Israel. So now we have the kingdom that is divided, right? And you have two kings ruling over two different kingdoms, Israel and Judah. And none of these guys did what was right for the people of God. Right? Look at Rehoboam. Let's jump back to him for a moment. Because Rehoboam was the son of one of the wives of Solomon that worshipped a god named Molech. Molech was the god of fire. Molech was the god of child sacrifice. Right? And so what did Rehoboam do after he ascended the throne? If you jump over to 1 Kings 14, I want to just share with you a couple of verses. Verse 22, it says, during Rehoboam's reign, the people of Judah did what was evil in the Lord's sight, provoking his anger with their sin, for it was even worse than that of their ancestors. That's a telling verse. That's a telling verse, because we've been looking at the story of Israel. Okay, we've been looking at it for months. We've been following it all the way from the time of Egypt, and following it through the time of Joshua, through the time of Judges, and now through the time of Kings. And here's a statement that is worth that is worth considering. It says they were worse than any of their ancestors. Right? So they were in a way out of control. They were in land that Israel had never before dabbled in as far as evil is concerned, right? And so in verse 23 it says, for they also build for themselves pagan shrines set up and sacred pillars and Asherah poles on every high hill and under every tree, and there were even male and female shrine prostitutes throughout the land. So what happens? Rehoboam ascends into the throne, and what does Judah do? Judah cast off all types of restraints, and they start surrendering themselves or giving themselves back to pagan idolatry. And they build all these shrines, and they build all these sacred pillars, and they institute the priesthood between men and women who are not just priests, who are now prostitutes, to give people the pleasure that they want, at that point. And so now the decline is severe, right? Now, interesting thing about Asherah pole. An Asherah pole, this is, it was on every hill, there was an Asherah. An Asherah pole were poles of trees, were think of it as a bark, or think of it in Alaska, they have these totem poles, right? Well, think of something sort of like that, but much more primitive. Maybe it was a figure of a woman. Maybe it was a figure of a goddess. The goddess Asherah, now watch this. The goddess Asherah, according to the pagan teaching and tradition, okay, her symbol was the tree of life, right? And so they put up a pole or a trunk of a tree. Oftentimes it was carved, sometimes it wasn't, and it was decorated. And she was considered the mother goddess that was responsible for all their other gods. And so later on, as Jews began to mix pagan worship and they began to develop a syncretistic form of worship, syncretistic meaning they synchronize it with other pagan religions. So when the Jews took their Judaism and combined it, okay, with pagan syncretism, there was a teaching that permeated the land that said that this woman right here, or this goddess, okay, Asherah, was the wife of the Jewish god Yahweh. Because the names were similar. El. They referred to God as El because they had the same root name. And so that's what they mean by Asherah pole. So now the land is being polluted with all these types of idolatry. And so guess what happens? When you reject God in favor of following other gods, then God is no longer obligated to protect you. Amen. No. Amen, Pastor. That's absolutely true. Yeah, when you forsake God, you can't be praying, God, now protect me, right? And so what happens? What was the result of this pagan resurgence, if you will, in Israel? Look at verse 25. In the fifth year of King Rehoboam's reign, King Shishak of Egypt came and attacked Jerusalem. And he ransacked the treasuries of the Lord's temple and the royal palace. He ransacked it. That means he took everything, all the spoils, right? And he stole everything, including all the gold shields Solomon had made. So he took all the gold. He took all the treasures from the palace and from the temple. And then verse 30, it says, and there was constant war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam. God says, you're not going to serve me. You're not going to follow after me. Then, you know, it's you rejecting me. It's not me rejecting you. So my umbrella of protection is going to be not lifted off of you. You've actually decided to walk out away from it, from underneath it. Right? And so that was Rehoboam, a little bit of introduction into Rehoboam's life. Look at Jeroboam, because if Rehoboam was bad, Jeroboam was worse. Because Rehoboam was passive in the fact that he allowed it all to happen. He participated in it. But if nothing really says that he initiated it. Jeroboam, no. Jeroboam was active. Jeroboam initiated it, right? And Jeroboam played a very active role in the decline of the northern kingdom, right? And you look at his story's, you know, turn back to 1 Kings chapter 12. Because Jeroboam now has his kingdom. I got 10 tribes. But all of a sudden, he's a little paranoid. And he's a little self-conscious. Right, and he's thinking, you know, when the people return to Jerusalem to worship, and they will, because Jerusalem was a center of worship. When the people return to Jerusalem to worship, maybe they're going to have a change of heart. If they have a change of heart, they're going to pledge an allegiance to the king there. Right? If they pledge an allegiance to the king there, they're going to return home and they're going to kill me. Right? So he's got this paranoia going on. The people, I can't let them go. If I let them go to Jerusalem, they're going to come back and they're going to take me out. Right, so what does he do? He devises a plan to keep the people in the northern kingdom. He devises a plan to keep them in the north. Right, and look at verse 28, 1 Kings chapter 12. It says, so on the advice of his counselors, the king made two golden calves. Are you kidding me? Didn't you learn the story of Moses and Aaron when Moses was up in the mountain? Nope, not only one, two. Two golden calves, and he said to the people, listen, it's too much trouble. It's too much trouble for you to worship in Jerusalem. It's too far. The journey's too long. You need water. It's too much planification involved in it. You know, funds are low. You can't take that kind of break right now. You got it. So here's what I got an idea. It's too much for you to worship in Jerusalem. Look, Israel, these are the gods who brought you out of Egypt. He uses the same words that Aaron used when Aaron built the golden calf, right? It says, these are the gods who brought you out. And he placed these calf idols where? One in Bethel. Bethel means house of God. Bethel, and he placed one in Dan. One at either end of his kingdom. One to the north and one to the south. And look at what it says in verse 30. And this became a great sin, for the people worshipped the idols. Which idols? The idols that Jeroboam initiated and built for the northern kingdom. And it says in verse 31 that he also, Jeroboam, it puts his name on it, Jeroboam erected buildings at pagan shrines, and he ordained priests from the common people, and he instituted a religious festival. Watch this. He instituted a religious festival in Bethel in imitation of the annual festival of shelters, or the festival of booths, or the festival of tabernacles, right? The Feast of Tabernacles in Judah. So what did he actually do? Remember what God told Jeroboam? He says, if you do things the right way, you're going to be successful if you obey my commandments. But now what is he doing? He's creating a counterfeit religion. And what is he doing with that counterfeit religion? He's mixing a little bit of Judaism with a little bit of with a whole lot more of pagan worship. And so he's creating this syncretistic religion that looks Jewish. When he presents it to the people, it has the feeling of being Jewish. The festivals look Jewish. And so now all of a sudden, they're not defiling their conscience that much. Right? And it turned people's hearts towards that idolatry. And God was not happy with that. Right? And so what did he create? He created a convenient, user-friendly religion. That it appealed to the masses, right? It appealed to everybody, and it removed all their restrictions. There was no more keeping the law this way, keeping the law. No, just come to a festival. Just come to a party. We're having a giant party, and you can fellowship with some of the temple male and female prostitutes. It was all about pleasure, right? And now think about that, because you know, our churches nowadays certainly don't go this far, but I do think that there's a component in many of our churches where we want to appeal to the masses and we want to present to them a user-friendly religion, a convenient way of worshiping. We want people to stay happy. So we don't deal with serious issues. You know, we don't deal with, you know, sin. Listen, the bulk of the Bible deals with sin. No, don't talk to me about things that are negative. Listen, it's not that I want to talk to you about something negative, but if you keep downplaying sin, you're also downplaying the sacrifice of the Lord Jesus Christ. If sin is no big deal, then you're minimizing what he did. Right? So it's important that we proclaim the full. That's why I love this Bible study in particular, this series, is because it helps us go from all the stories. And not all the stories have happy endings, right? Now, next week, I'm excited because next week we're going to start looking into the life of some of the more famous prophets in the history of Israel, Elijah and Elisha. We love their story. Man, we love the power and the miracles. And, you know, God does amazing things. Yeah, we'll get to that next week. But this week, we're dealing with division. This week we're dealing with sin. This week we're dealing with idolatry that caused that division and that caused a great breakdown in that particular nation, right? And so here's the thing about Jeroboam's wickedness is that it became the standard by which all the other kings were measured. In fact, there's a statement. It says, the statement that you're going to find in the Bible is Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who caused Israel to sin, right? You're going to find that repeated 19 different times in the books of the Kings. So a new king would succeed him. And what was the description of the new king? He didn't follow after God. He followed after the evil ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who caused Israel to sin. How about this other king that succeeded him? Okay, he followed after what? He didn't follow the Lord wholeheartedly. He went after the idols and he put pagan idols in the land. He did what? He did that of his father, committed the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who caused Israel to sin. So 19 times you have this description of Jeroboam. Not a good resume.